Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Interview. Today I have a fabulous guest who has two seasons of Last Guest. So just so you guys know, we're only doing season one today. If he likes me, he'll probably come back for season two, but we'll have to wait. I'm going to introduce him now. Robert Jerome Pagan? Okay, yeah, I'm trying, guys. Working on my Puerto Rican, which is probably very bad, but I am trying. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a really nice, easy question. I mean, there's a lot in this. I mean, it's a lot. Not six episodes I think I watched. I can't remember, but there's a lot. Why go the web series as opposed to an actual film?
Well, so that's actually a great question, because I actually really started off with, it was going to be a film. And it was a project that, to be honest, Last Gasp was my first ever film project. I had worked in theater for 30 years and then went over to film, and I didn't know what I was doing. And so as a writer and as a filmmaker, you know, really just figuring out what he was doing, what I found out is I wrote way more than a film. There's actually going to be four seasons of Last Gasp. Season one was six episodes. Season two is four episodes. But I just felt like it was easier to digest. There's a lot of topics. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of drama. And all that in an hour kind of feels like it's too much. It's like going to a Batman movie and just watching every single action fight after, you know, one after another, instead of really getting those long drawn pauses. And so like people who want to binge it, they binge straight through the six episodes, but others who kind of want to really savor on what they're watching, because the episodes can be heavy, they have that option to kind of really kind of pace themselves.
Well, I guess I should tell the viewers, I think I watched maybe one or two a day. I know I didn't plow through it, because I personally needed time to savor each one. And it's easier for me to make notes and think about things. And I would recommend people do that. Don't plow through this. It is heavy topics, some of them. I mean, I find the first couple are kind of light and fun, and then you kind of take a weird turn. So let's start there. Did you know when you're writing a comedy in the first couple episodes, it was light, it was fun, and then I find the last four are just dark?
So, you know, the funny thing about season one is season one was actually filmed after season two. So season two was actually filmed first, which was a little bit more indier, a little bit more raw. And I was like, you know, to really get an audience into a series, you can't start off that intense. And so I was like, I really wanted to bring in, one, the lightness of life, because all the characters, they're young, you know, they're in that age of their life where they're carefree, and they're kind of just doing what they want to do. And so I wanted the audience to feel safe. And so in the first two episodes, you really do feel safe. Yeah, there's some tension, there's some drama, but overall you're kind of like, this is actually kind of funny. These characters are, you know, funny. Damien is a little bit of a D-I-C-K, you know, he has that bit of an attitude to him. you're very correct that the first two have a lot of that humor. There's a lot of funniness, and you have to make people laugh before they cry. That's the perfect example there.
So you start off, you wrote and direct this. I want people to know that. You did it all. So you have music. I mean, how did you choose the music? Because I do have notes, different music all the time, constantly different. So where did your music selections come from?
So there are two different things that I did. Mainly when I was starting this project, I knew that I wanted to really have indie music be a big carrying force of the project, because they're all artists. And so when you're working with artists inside a world of art, it has that meta feel. And so I didn't want anything that was disingenuous. So I really reached out and worked with a lot of independent artists directly for this series. We had Nick Adams, we had Nick Roy, was another one, and they really did help build that landscape of music because, yeah, like you said, every song's different. Every moment has different music attention. It really is scored. A lot of people tell me it feels almost like a theatrical musical movement piece almost, because the music actually does help propel the story versus, oh, that's just cool sound or that's a cool song. When you're really listening to the lyrics, you're like, ooh, did someone write this for this show? And yeah, I mean, a lot of the music was either written directly for the show or inspired me while I was writing with other artists.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question that kind of, okay, I'm watching season one, obviously. I've never seen season two. I want to be honest. I'll get there. Now, I really felt these people knew each other in season one. Like, I will say the acting is excellent, especially around the car scene. The dialogue there felt like dialogue I would have with my friends. I don't drive. They'll come pick me up. Like, that kind of stuff seemed like you're pulling from your reality. You know these people.
Yeah, I mean, I was inspired a lot from people who I mean, I grew up in the East Bay in California, so San Francisco area. And I grew up in the early thousands. And so a lot of the kids or the characters are inspired by situations in my life. But realistically, I think the reason why, and a lot of people have said that, they say that the characters feel so natural, or just like the scenes just seem like you guys have known each other for years. Which is not the case. A lot of the actors were from across the country. The lead actor, Ben, was from Vermont, and he flew in during COVID to California and spent 6 months with us as we created four seasons of this great show together. But the big thing, I think, is because it had one writer. Unlike a lot of other dramas where you have a lot of writers in one room, yes, I listen to my actors and I listen to my husband, who was one of the executive producers, and of course, a cinematographer, Craig, but I held true to the story and I didn't allow myself to differentiate from that. And I feel like sometimes when you have multiple writers in that writing room, sometimes the voices can lack because you're trying to please everyone. But like, I took this from almost the playwriting aspect of like, I'm writing this with intention. Every character has an arc, and I really wanted that. And that's why they feel natural and real, because every character was well thought out.
Oh, good work on that. I thought it might be due to you just told me your theater background, because I definitely think this comes like a live play. Like there, I hate to do this to you, but there's movie acting and there's theater acting. They're two different things in my world. And I definitely felt this was theater acting in a play. And maybe that's why it works so well as a web series and not a movie, because I find your characters do have depth. They do have arcs, and you don't see that in a film just because they don't have time.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I also spent a really long time developing the psychological analysis of all the characters with the actors. Like Damien, Ben spent weeks before we started even the first shot really analyzing who Damien was. And the funny thing is Ben was not the original Damien. He was not the person I cast as Damien. We actually had cast an actor who ended up getting on set and getting into the role and realized that it was just going to be too deep for him and too dark, and he just couldn't do it. And so Ben was actually cast as Ben. And so he ended up going from the secondary love character to the lead of the entire series overnight. And sometimes things are meant to happen, and it really was meant to happen, because his portrayal of Damien, I don't see anyone else doing it the justice that he did.
Okay, I just want to go with some little things now about episode one, just to, so people know. I thought drug dealers are women. I thought that was a good trick. We never see that. Very rarely do I can't think of one that I've ever seen in anything I see that a woman is a drug dealer. I'm like, oh, that's something new. I like that. And yeah. You get but, her backstory. Her backstory on her was wonderful, but we don't get that for a couple episodes.
Yeah, and the thing is that she's in season two. She actually her character grows throughout the season as well and has a really pretty good arc in season three.
Well, I expect everybody to be back in season two, to be honest with you. I don't see anybody leaving.
So actually, the funny thing is season two goes back in time. Season two.
Oh.
Yes. So season two is the story of Ben and Danny, not Ben and Jeremy. So right now you're seeing that kind of the aftermath. And now in season two, you flash back and you're in almost purgatory because as season two ends, you realize you're like, where does this go? How like what happens to Damien? And so all season two is in, it takes place in his head.
We'll get there. We promise. I will get there when I start it. The lighting of the campfire. How much work was that for you? Because it looks pitch black where you're filming. And I mean, if you don't have a fire, you can't see anything. And you're trying to have a full-on conversation around this fire with numerous people. And I mean, I know you have the fire's light, which is okay. But you have a lot more work to do than just that. So how'd you like that?
So the funny thing is again, this was one of those things where being a new filmmaker and theater person, not a film person, shot me in the foot because like I show up to our location. It's a beautiful, you know, 3, 4, 5 acres. We're out there by ourselves and I'm like, oh, it's a camping scene. There's no power.
No, that's what I'm thinking.
Right. And so we're running extension cords from the owner's house and we're just doing a bunch of stuff. And we actually did a lot of practical fire lighting behind the fire lighting. So like there are lanterns, things that so that we would not take away from that natural kind of almost 90s woods feel that I really wanted that. I wanted you to feel like you were in the woods. And I feel like sometimes when you use too much, you know, too many lights to actually light a scene outside, then you're using too much After Effects in the coloring and it just doesn't feel natural to get that tone. But funny thing is half of the camping trip was filmed on location. Half of it was filmed either in my backyard or in my living room.
Really?
So a lot of magic went into that effort.
I do have one more question for my next camping question. I forgot. Whose house did you use to start off the whole scene?
That was my old house in California. I don't live there anymore. But yeah.
Okay. Filming inside a tent. How big is this tent? Because, I mean, it looks huge. But, I mean, I'm like, maybe it's just where you have the scabbard situated.
20 by 6.5 feet tall.
Okay, so it is a huge tent because I'm like
a huge tent. So and the funny thing is it's technically my tent. I used to work and run the Renaissance Fair in Northern California, so it was it was the tent that I lived in for when I was on site.
Okay, so I did have a question. It starts off episode two. We have a carpet in the tent, which I don't think I've ever seen in anything. Is that normal that you put a carpet in your tent?
I am gayer than gay, and so yes.
That's fine. I don't know. I've just never seen it.
But no, and the thing is that came from doing the Renaissance Fair. So when you're outside and, you know, when you're in the dust, you kind of want to have something to feel a little bit, you know, nice and luxury, and you want to take off your shoes, and you don't want that tarp on it. So, yeah, I used to put carpets in my tents and blow up air mattresses and everything, yeah.
I love it. That's a great story. Your comment just made me laugh. How many people do you know camp in December? I don't know if I'm ever going to get this done.
So the joke is I used to go camping with my friends every December for my birthday. And I'm a Sagittarius and my birthday is December. So that was kind of – that's another mirroring kind of moment between Damien and I. Is, you know, Damien has a lot of aspects of me when I was younger. And one of those major aspects was the fact that he is a Sagittarius and very, very much a Sagittarius.
So he's you at times, not all the time, but I mean, he's an extension of you I'm getting.
Yeah, and the funny thing is there's a moment in the show where me as Rick, I say, I'm sitting here watching my youth in front of me, and I'm teetering on an edge, and I'm talking about Damien, which was really meta for me as I'm sitting at, you know, in a campsite at, you know, 3:30 in the morning at 30 degrees, you know, and looking at this and going, wow, that, yeah, he has a lot of me in him.
I'm getting that impression. So I'm going to have to ask, did you celebrate a birthday week?
Yes, I used to, and every day used to be a different, different theme.
Okay, I have to ask, why you can't just leave it. What themes am I looking at here? I need to know.
So, I mean, we used to do like the crazy world of Robert, where people would dress up as different sides of me because they'd say like, oh, Robert, you know, like the angry Robert, the party Robert. We used to do toga parties. We used to do absinthe nights where like, we dress up and only drink absinthe and like, yeah, it's crazy.
I love it. I wish I knew you then. I would come to absinthe night for sure. Oh my God, you're making me laugh too hard. The best San Francisco cachuterie is the La Rock. Do one of your characters make that statement? The best San Francisco cachuterie. Bad San Francisco car chase is The Rock. I'm coming here to say The Rock is what you have listed.
Yes. That is the opening of episode four, I think.
I don't know. I just have it in my notes to discuss it. So,
yeah, I mean, I loved that movie as a kid. And like, I remember watching Sean Connery and them driving the Ferrari down San Francisco and just knowing that it was, because I grew up there, they shut down the streets 2 years before that movie came out, and they were doing this big car chase. And then to see it on film and to see it in a moment and see all those places, to this day, probably the best car chase I've ever seen in any action movie.
Hold on. Okay. I got two films I'm going to put up against it. Actually, three. Okay. Bullet with Steve McQueen.
Okay.
French Connection.
Never seen it.
And Ronin.
I haven't seen the last two.
So. Okay. So I expect you to do some homework, and I'm putting those up against yours. Because, sorry, I'm a movie guy. I'm like, I can't let that pass. I'm totally going to get that up.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that is all the actors were so young, they thought I was talking about Dwayne Johnson. They didn't even realize there was a movie called The Rock and that it was about Alcatraz. I was like, yeah. So like, that was another fun thing about this cast is there was a lot of things that I was kind of teaching them about the early 2000s and late 1990s that they were just completely clueless about. They're like, what? Like, I'm like, yeah, it's just the way it was, guys. So
Where did all the VHS tapes come from?
They are – so funny thing about the VHS tapes is they're mine. And they're all movies that I stole from Blockbuster. No, I mean some of them are movies that just never got returned to Blockbuster or got bought on those last things. But I'm obsessed with collecting vinyl and VHS. It's just one of the things that I was. So like when – we were looking for props. People were like, well, how do we find all these old things? I'm like, well, I actually have my old computer from 2000. So a lot of this stuff was sourced from my closet.
Excellent.
Like the stories and props were sourced from my closet. There you go.
I love it. Okay. A question that makes me laugh. Film is for hacks that don't know what art is. Is that a personal opinion?
That was okay. So the funny thing is up until 2020, I had always told my friends, cause I worked in theater pretty accomplished and was running theaters, and 2020 changed the world. And up until then I had always said, I hate film, never going to direct film, never going to write for it. You're never going to see me in a film. I did television stuff as a kid. I hated being on set. I hated everything. Never going to do film. As I was writing the script for this, I was like, I have to make fun of myself. And so that was one of those meta lines that a lot of my friends, as soon as they saw it, they called me and they go, yeah, and here you are, you know, 10 years later, actually doing film.
I think that's hysterical. So have your opinion changed on film then, or no?
So I think that my opinion has changed on art film, on independent film, on I think that just like theater, there's lazy theater makers and there's lazy filmmakers. And I think that I learned that there are more lazy filmmakers whose movies are in the movie theaters than there are in Broadway shows for theater makers, for one. And so, yes, there are a lot of times where I feel that being a film director can be much more of a hack because you don't know anything about acting. So that was another thing that I dealt with a lot of the actors that I had on the set. They were film majors. I am a theater person. They had no understanding on what acting was. They had great understanding on all these 180 rules and things you're not supposed to break that I didn't follow at all. And what, and what a good, you know, go shadow and focus and all that. And they were so wrapped up in that, that they couldn't even understand that if your character doesn't have depth and your acting sucks, it doesn't matter how pretty your film is, because then you're not, your story's not going to get across. And it's the same thing. Like, you can have the worst sound in film, period. If your actors are good and their story is good, people will muddle through to get through it. But like, if your cinematographer's horrible and the story is good, they're still going to watch it. Like, that's just the truth. So to me, it's more about, I don't think that it's completely hacks. I think that most film directors do not take the time to invest in the art outside of what an angle is and what lens they are using and how to set up a shot. And I think that the best film directors are ones who have come from the theater world. And that's, you know, I'm a big Baz Luhrmann fan. I love Baz Luhrmann. I love Julie Taymor. Like, those are people who have heavy theatrical backgrounds. And when you watch their ridiculously over the top movies, you're still in depth inside that character.
Okay. Since you just saw Baz Luhrmann and I'm starting to get to know you a little bit better as this goes, so I have two questions. How much do you like The Great Gatsby, and how much did you like Elvis then? Because those are totally two things I think you would have loved.
So I have not seen Elvis yet, and everyone's like, why haven't you seen it yet? Mainly because I wasn't a huge fan of Elvis's music, just personally. So like, it just never drove to me. Gatsby I did love, but I didn't like it as much as I love the original.
I agree.
And I think that kind of surprised people. But the original, the acting, the connection, and the storytelling was done so well that Baz was really setting himself up to just knowing he was going to make a second-rate version of Gatsby, because the first one was just so good. Like, and it was so close to what I envisioned in my head while reading the book in school. The first movie was so close to that, that the second one kind of felt like Willy Wonka 2. Like, almost like, I love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I don't like Tim Burton's Willy Wonka. And like, that's kind of how I felt with that Gatsby almost.
That's fair. I totally accept. That's a totally fair answer. Big question. Have you ever played Secrets?
No. The game? Is it a game?
The game in the movie.
Oh, no, but I have been that. I have been that Damien before, where I've blurted out secrets. I definitely have. But that actually, that whole story is based on a night that we did have. Like, I did have this Gatsby party night that was pretty dark like that. And we did kind of do this truth or dare with, you know, ecstasy induced while we were 18 and 19. Yeah, nice. It was. Yeah.
When your friends have seen this and know you from that long, I mean, hopefully you have friends from that period still around. What reaction are they giving you? Because they're recognizing things that I won't know. Like, you know what I mean? Things you say and things you've written about. What's their reaction to this?
Their first reaction was, wow, Ben is totally you in certain moments. Like, he sounds like you. He, like, the way he delivers stuff is, you know, that tripped them out a little bit. But for the most part, because a lot of it is, especially in the later seasons, a lot of it is very fabricated. I mean, because as us as a group, as of the Lost Tribe, we only spent a year and a half together as friends, and then we went off around the world to do other things. But a lot of them have said that they didn't realize how important we were to each other until they watched this. And it's the truth. Like, a lot of these people, I can not talk to for years, and then I see them or I talk to them again, and the connection that we had really does, it cherishes that. And so for them, it's almost kind of like an acknowledgement of we had something very important that a lot of people just don't get to have. Like, a lot of people don't have friendships like the ones these characters get.
I made a note about family sin in the house. Is this common? Because I can't say I'm familiar with this concept.
A family sin. So, like, I'm Catholic. I was a Catholic minister, a Catholic youth minister. I ran Catholic vacation Bible schools, very much like Damien does. He talks about working for the church. And I think that the undertone of sin and what Damien perceives to be God and what God's righteousness is a parallel throughout the entire series. Like I said, the second season goes even further into that. Second season, the title episode, the shows are Purgatory, Transstantiation, like they're all after Catholic rites. So sin is something that is buried within that ideology of the show completely. And passing on sin and a family sin, I think, is something that all of these characters realize. But in the 90s and the thousands, we called it sin. Today we call it trauma. And I think that they are scared of their trauma, and that therefore they call it a sin. And as you see, as they become more connected to that, as Damien is willing to cross the line of what he believes a sin in, what he doesn't believe a sin is, that all definitely takes a toll. And sin is heavy for a lot of these characters. I mean, especially for Ben's character, you know, Damien's first love, like, sin drives him to do stuff that, you know, unfortunately a lot of children do.
Okay, we're at your favorite part of the show. Fun three random questions you cannot prepare for, so be prepared. just because your first time on the show, everybody gets the same. First one, favorite film.
Favorite film. The Exorcist.
Oh, surprising choice, but I like it. Favorite film set in San Francisco that's not The Rock.
What was that? Favorite film sentence?
Favorite film set in San Francisco that's not The Rock.
That's not The Rock. Milk. Harvey Milk. The movie Milk was really wonderful. Well done. And I was an extra in that movie during the riot scenes. So
okay. Then I know exactly where you are because I have seen Milk. Sorry, I'm trying to read my own notes now. One person you'll work with in the future, you think, or want to work with in the future?
Wow. I would love. That's a really hard one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Only because I don't see. I would like to work. Yeah, see, you know, there's so many people that I would love to work with, but I would love to work with Ian McKellen.
Okay, that works. He's a wonderful actor.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think that's the reason why. It's because I think that I would be able to learn so much from him. I like to work with people that challenge me and make me learn. And even like the actors on this program, on Last Gasp, I learn from each and every actor. And I think that when a director can learn from the people that he works with, that's when you're doing the real work, when you're learning from each other and growing. Because everything should be about growth.
Okay, last thing, it's really easy. Promote your stuff.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Come and check out our YouTube channel, R. Jerome P. Last Gasp season 1 and season 2 are on there. I also have another television show called an Oscar winning movie, the series, which is a American Pie style comedy, completely irreverent old 90s style slasher film. We make fun of film and slashers. And then I have an amazing hour-long feature called An American Posada, which is in black and white, and it takes place in Christmas, and it talks about not only the Catholic tradition of what a posada is and the Mary and Joseph story, but it tackles immigration in the 1950s and racism in California.
Thank you for your time, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to that interview with Simon. Could you please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify? And if you have any extra change, feel free to send it to us at PayPal. And that's extrafeatures@gmail.com on PayPal. Thank you. Bye.